Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Jeff Fiegels, happy Friday, everybody. 201-939-4513. That's how you get in on the conversation. We could talk about the Giants head coaching search. We could talk about the draft. We could talk about free agency. We could talk about the weekend games. Best individual football day of the year this Sunday. Last weekend was the best weekend. This weekend you get the best day. Before we get into those games, Jeff, I want to get your take on obviously all the reports this week about Pat Shurmur being quote-unquote the Giants head coach in waiting. I want to stress that all of that is speculation. League rules do not allow the Giants to even come to a verbal agreement with any head coaches currently still in the NFL playoffs. So again, not doubting the reporters or their reports, but all of that right now is speculation. We'll see what happens when and if the Vikings are limited or if the Giants go in a different direction. But let's talk about Shurmur a little bit. We've done this week. People have heard me talk about him a little bit, Jeff. I want to get your take, just on your take on him as a coach, how he could fit here if he does arrive, and what he would bring to the table.
Well, I think that when the coaching search went on, there were some of the qualifications were, you know, you want an ex-coach, so we got that, check that box. And in line with that, I think that, you know.
And coordinator experience, by the way.
Coordinator experience, yeah. So I think that, you know, we always talk about some of these coaches that didn't make it as an NFL coach and they're learning from it. You got to believe that they have to learn, you know, what to and what not to do again. Okay, you would hope.
Yep.
All right. But we're not going to find that out until if this happens and he is so the coach. But I think that, you know, there's some things. I did hear an interview with Mike Holmgren the other day on the radio that was very insightful. I think that he picked the guy and thought he was going to be a good coach. They were making some progress. He was at that time a little bit handcuffed because of the lockout and things that went on when he was in Cleveland.
There was a lockout in his first season,
year.
And then the second year the team was sold midseason.
Yeah,
that's a rough couple of years.
That's a rough couple. But, you know, I think that, you know, from a head, he kind of understands what he needs to do. He is the quarterback whisperer, and obviously this keeps going into the draft and who they're going to keep and who they're not going to keep. But I think the most important thing for me about Pat Shurmur and if he is going to be the next head coach is to establish the staff. I think that the staff, to me, and we've talked about the interview process and these questions that have been asked in the meeting. Who can you bring to your staff? And, you know, and you talk about that. So if he is going to be the coach, I'm almost certain he has most of his staff already, you know, put in order, with exception maybe to a few here and there. But I think it's important that you get a mix of some of those veteran coaches and then some of the younger coaches, because you do want to be able to relate to the younger generation of
and
players.
Younger guys bring in new ideas too, which you
no
like.
No question. Yeah. So, you know, just kind of like you say, old school, some old school guys, they always just get set in their ways, and you got to have some of that young mind that come in. So I think that is important, but the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, first and foremost, have got to be your guys that you trust the most. He's, you know, we don't know if he is a coach, if he's going to be calling the plays or not. But the fact is that, you know, those are the two guys, and those are important hires, in my opinion. They really have to be in any coaching.
Of course, when
you hire a new coach.
And from the Giants' perspective, there is a prior relationship for the Giants' defensive coordinator last year, Steve Spagnuolo. They were in Philly together for a long time. Again, that's simply speculation. Of course, Spags did interview for the head coaching position here as well and has been defensive coordinator here on two separate occasions, so you wonder about that. And then in terms of the offensive coordinator, it's funny, watching tape, Jeff, over the past few days, because last week, and we talked about this, it's like, oh, he's a West Coast guy. Do you want to go West Coast again? But watching what he did with the Vikings this year, it's a mix of a lot of different stuff. I feel like he really was influenced being with Chip Kelly for 3 years in Philly and then being with Norv Turner for a year in Minnesota last year before he took over the offensive coordinator duties. And he has pulled a little bit from both those systems. He's going down the field with the ball.
That's Norv Turner.
Not your classic,
right,
you know, super-duper West Coast deal. They will run power with the run game. They run 47% of the time with the Vikings this year, which is not a West Coast trait.
Yep.
So I think his experience outside of the system he grew up with Andy Reid, has probably helped him and made him a better coach since he left Cleveland.
It's a potpourri of offense.
It
and
is.
I think that one thing that I like what I've heard and I have actually seen is that, you know, he makes adjustments and he actually will design plays and do things to help – your team win with the personnel you have on the field. Take the strengths that you have and build offenses around those certain players and do things on a weekly basis.
Yeah, don't just take your system and say, this is what we're doing, whoever
yeah.
we have,
don't,
we're doing
don't
it.
Cram it down the guy's throat, so you right. got to be creative with it. And I think that makes sense when you're coaching and you're going up opponents every week and trying to game plan. And we all talk about matchups every week. That's what it's all about. So create mismatches and try to get your players in position to make plays. And then I think the really to stay on Pat Shurmur is that he's got a lot of work to do as far as when it comes to working with Dave Gettleman and the personnel staff about going down this roster and understanding who's on this team, who's not going to be on this team, and how to build it for the future. And not only that, you got the Eli Manning. I think you got the OBJ situation with his contract, and is he going to or not going to be back on the field? And you know, there's a lot of things that that are kind of connected with football, but they're you don't want it to be that big elephant in the room at the beginning of the year. You got to address these things right away and understand how they're going to go forward. And certainly I think that's going to happen. But I think that, if Pat Shurmur is the guy, he's going to come in here. He's going to have to command the respect of the roster. That's the big thing that I feel, in my opinion, that was lost last year from the players' perspective. You know, the suspensions, the way the guys that weren't playing, I don't know if there was that respect level that they had for the head coach. You certainly have to have that, and that's what Pat Shurmur is going to have to establish right away when he gets here.
Yeah, and how he leads, how he runs the building, and how he does things like that is stuff that we really aren't going to know about until he's in here doing it. So
no
that's
question.
Something we'll have to kind of wait and see on. All right, that's a good stuff on Shurmur. Again, like I said earlier in the week, folks, I can't take a whole lot of what he did in Cleveland as a head coach with the talent he had on his roster. Colt McCoy, Brandon Whedon, Greg Little was his number one wide receiver there. I mean, it was a mess, needless to say.
Well, listen, depending on what the Vikings do this weekend, we'll know soon enough. But, I mean, if not, it's going to be 3 weeks.
Yeah, who knows? And who knows when or if an announcement will be made regarding the Giants head coach position. All right, the Vikings are in action this week, by the way. And why don't we start with the NFC first, Jeff, taking on the Eagles and two teams that have their quote-unquote backup quarterbacks in. Neither quarterback was supposed to be the starter at the beginning of the year. Obviously, Case Keenum took over much longer ago than Nick Foles did.
Games.
But these offenses are both going to try to run the football. They're going to put their quarterback in specific situations and schemes to help them succeed, and they're also going to try to win with their defense. So I think this is going to be a very, very physical. It's going to be outdoors in Philadelphia. Tough.
Weather's
going to
be
out.
Okay. Weather's going
to
be fine.
It is supposed to be a beautiful weekend.
Yeah.
And whichever team to me in this game doesn't have that back-breaking special teams mistake or back-breaking turnover is probably the team that's going to win, because I don't see either one of these teams sustaining long drives down the field to score. They're going to need some help.
Yeah,
so the team that doesn't give the other team help, in my opinion, is probably the team that's going to win.
Well, and you look at the games last week, there was plays in special teams. There was turnovers. You know, you look at the way that the Jacksonville Jaguars beat the Steelers last week was those two turnovers that they got, and they turned them into points. I mean, that was kind of a scoring fest, something we didn't think that we would see in that game.
No.
But the fact is those turnovers led to points, and that's how Jacksonville was in. But, yeah, I think that the number one rule, and we've talked about it many times, is when you're a road team, you can't turn the ball over on the road, and that's the Vikings. They're not going to be able to do that. But I'm agreeing with you that they're going to try to pound the football. One of these teams is going to have to put a drive together. Philly, they don't score a lot of points. And so, but, the Minnesota Vikings, they can put up some points on you. They can throw the football. I think that with that defense, I think that they can go in there and beat Philadelphia. I'm going to pick the Vikings this weekend.
I agree.
Just for the fact that I think when it comes to big games like this and in the championship games, your defense, you got to lean on your defense, especially when you have an offense with Case Keenum. He's done a great job all season. You just hope that he can just play two more good games.
Jeff, I'm going to make this pretty simple. If you were to go into this game, which offense do you like better, the Vikings or the Eagles?
I would take the Vikings.
Which defense would you take, Vikings or Eagles?
I would take the Vikings, too.
So I don't know how you can't give the Vikings an advantage in this game. Now, I think the Eagles' pass rush is probably a little bit better than the Vikings. Now, the Vikings' pass rush is good, but the Eagles might have a top three pass rush in all of football.
But the Vikings' defensive, their secondary is ridiculous.
The Vikings' secondary might be the best in football.
Yeah.
With Xavier Rhodes and Harrison Smith, both linebacker groups are both pretty good. I think the Vikings' linebacker group is probably a little bit better because Anthony Barr, I think, is probably the best player of those two groups. So, to me, the Vikings have the advantage, and as long as Case Keenum plays within himself, I think they should be able to win this football
game.
And
I think that the Philly offense, they like to rely on those tight ends a lot. I think that the Vikings linebacker can cover those tight ends.
And Harrison Smith,
pretty
for that
well.
Matter.
Yes, and exactly. Yeah,
and by the way,
down here.
I think the Eagles last week also adjusted their offense. And I think I'm not
they played
say,
a horrible first half.
I'm not going to say it caught Atlanta by surprise, but the amount of run-pass options they ran and that really
and
short,
stuck with
quick
it.
Passing game and stuck with it, and Atlanta could not adjust to it to get it stopped.
Yeah.
A week practicing against that, that ain't going to work against the Vikings defense.
Yeah.
So
plus, because they've already seen it.
And look, if Doug Peterson can figure out a way to score a different way and mix things up again, God bless him, I think it's going to be a tough thing to do.
It is. It really is. But you look at the way that Philly, they won that game, but they played a horrible game in the first half. They turned the ball over. They put the ball on the ground a couple times. You cannot do that. And
the Falcons couldn't score touchdowns. That's the problem.
There you go. Exactly. And so it should be a good game. I think it's going to be – I don't think it's going to be a – I think it's going to be a close game. I really do. I think that
I
maybe, you know, a touchdown or less to be the deciding factor here.
I think one thing you have to look out for in this game – are double moves and big plays by the Vikings off play action.
They like to throw that ball downfield.
They like to run play action. They like to run double moves. Adam Thielen's one of the best route runners in football. The Eagles cornerback like to be very aggressive and push up and bite on some of those pump fakes.
Yep.
If they can protect long enough, I think the Vikings might have a chance to make some big plays.
And again, you know, we mentioned the weather. The weather's going to be good. So, you know, last week in that Philly-Atlanta game, it was very, very windy. So there was part of that the reason that Doug Peterson changed his game plan in the second half. He's like, remember the first throw he made of the game?
It was
like a punt.
Duck.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, the weather will be good, and I think that favors Case Keenum in that vertical passing game.
And that also hurt the Falcons last week, too. I think if that game's in better weather, they might figure out a
absolutely.
Way to win that game. All right, let's go to the other matchup, and that's the Patriots and the Jaguars. For selfish reasons, I'm sure that Jeff and I are both rooting pretty heavy for the Jaguars in this game. Tom Coughlin's down there. Pat Flaherty's down there. So we obviously would like
and
to
see. And it's the Patriots, so what else we got to say?
Of course. last week, you gave the Jaguars no chance. You buried
I know.
Them.
I buried them.
You said their goose was cooked.
Man.
But they figured out a way to beat the Steelers, despite the fact the Steelers made some of the best individually-based, skilled offensive plays I've seen in a playoff game in a long time.
Some of those throws that Ben Roethlisberger made in that game were ridiculous.
And the catches Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell made. Unbelievable.
But
unbelievable.
I also will tell you that some of the coaching in that game last week from Mike Tomlin, I have still to
and
me.
And by the way.
I don't get some of the things that they were doing.
I'm with you 100%. I said it on Twitter. They should have kicked off at the end. And look, do you think the Jaguars are going to let Blake Bortles throw there? They're going to run it three times and punt, okay? So that's number one. Throw that aside for a second. I know Todd Haley got fired this week because him and Ben aren't getting along, and that's the total sacrificial lamb here.
No question.
After a game, what did they lose, 42-38 or 40-something like that? You fire the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
When they let a Jaguars offense run some of the most basic things, boot plays to running backs, screens, short passes, and the Steelers defense didn't seem to adjust to that at all over the course of the game.
No, none.
Why isn't the defensive coordinator the guy being talked about this week? Because that was, Jeff, I mean, come on, that was a terrible defensive performance.
It was horrible. And you know, they deserved to lose the game. The Steelers deserved to lose the game because the way they played on defense, because some of the stupid coaching stuff that they did at the end of the game. And really, we know about Jacksonville's defense, okay? So you would expect that they would keep Pittsburgh's offense to a limited amount of points, but they didn't. But on the flip side of it, come on. The offense for the Jacksonville Jaguars is going to put up 42 points on you in a divisional playoff game?
And look, I realize a couple of those scores came off of the short fields and defense. That's
doesn't
fine,
matter, but you got to make some plays.
That's still 20-something points to the Jaguars' offense, which you really can't have. And that brings us to this week.
Well, Jack. I will tell you that, please. You know, the gentleman that got hurt, Shazier, they really miss him.
That's a really good point.
They really miss him in the middle of the field.
No argument.
And Blake Bortles is making some plays with his feet now. You know, going into this game, you know that they saw that Blake Bortles can run, and so the Patriots are going to definitely be able to, he's not a threat like some, you know, like a Cam Newton guy to run, but he will make some plays with his feet.
I
think that this is a game. Again, I'm giving them no chance just because. and maybe it worked for last week because maybe I'm gonna. It's me that you know. This is why they're winning or losing because I didn't give them a chance and they won.
The mush,
so,
of course.
But I think that you know, don't be surprised if they go in there and they can win this game. And the only way it's going to happen is if Tom Brady is indeed his throwing hand is hurt somewhat of a bit and they get pressure on the quarterback. It's just Captain Obvious, and that the Jacksonville Jaguars have to play almost the perfect game to beat these guys. I really think that no turnovers. They're going to have to put some points on the board. The one thing that, you know, the Patriots, they don't have a big vertical passing game.
And that was going to be my question. This Jacksonville defense is so physically talented, they don't have the type of playmakers the Steelers have, except for Tom Brady, of course, to beat those guys.
Right.
So how do you think they're going to navigate that offense to try to score points on Jacksonville?
I think that they're – and the Jacksonville Jaguars know that they have to stop one guy on offense. Okay, so, you know, and Belichick, he knows that. He understands that Gronkowski is the guy that they're going to try to have to stop if you're the Jacksonville. So they're going to design – a lot of short passing plays to get it to Amendola, all the other guys, because Gronk is still going to get his catches.
So you think it's going to be a lot of short, quick passes?
It's got to be. Who else can really run down the field?
And can you protect against the Jacksonville defensive line, too? So I agree. I think that's how they'll navigate it. And then defensively for
but I will tell you, the Jacksonville, as good as their defense is, they're not great against the run. So the Patriots are going to try to run the football.
I agree with you.
To set up maybe some play-action passes.
Yeah, so maybe Deion Lewis. We'll see some James White in the game. We'll see how they navigate that. And Rex Burkhead might be back this week.
But what I would like to see out of the Jaguars is that in the first half, this game has got to stay close. And for once, will a team please stop the Patriots from scoring in the last minute and a half of the first half? They seem to score something every – I don't know how they get the ball every single time, but they do. Am I right? I mean, it's unbelievable to me. But they got to be able to stay close in this game, okay, because offensively the Jaguars, they can't get in a shootout it's not going to be a shootout, but, you know, hopefully it's a good game. It's not like what happened last week against the Titans. You know, the Patriots just played with the Titans there for a quarter and then decided that they were going to show you who's boss, and they just took it over the game. But so it'll be interesting, and, you know, I would love to see.
So you have Vikings-Patriots in the Super Bowl?
I have Vikings-Patriots. I think that'll be a good game. I really do.
So do I. I agree.
And I don't think a lot of people want to see Jacksonville and Philly. That's it just doesn't sound right.
I am rooting for Jacksonville, Minnesota. Why not?
I mean, Jacksonville, Philadelphia Super Bowl to me sounds more like a preseason game than a Super Bowl, doesn't it? I mean, really, it doesn't.
I agree.
I mean, you think about it. I mean, Philly has been. I mean, Jacksonville. So I think the networks and everybody, as far as popularity goes, they want Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. You want the Patriots in the Super Bowl. It's just because. But just to see them go, just to have the Patriots be able to win seven consecutive AFC East titles to me is ridiculous. You know? Oh no, I'm sorry. It's the seventh. Isn't it the seventh NFC Championship game they've been to in a row?
It's consecutive. Yes.
Consecutive. Yeah.
AFC. Yes, correct.
That's insane.
All right, and finally, folks, I'll be off to the Senior Bowl next week. We'll have coverage on Giants.com, a lot of written content, a little bit of video, not a ton. It's kind of going out there, getting a feel for it. It'll be the first time we're out there.
Take a look at some
of the seniors that are going to be out there. Of course, the two big names are Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, the two starting quarterbacks. Well, actually, they will both be starting quarterbacks because they've both been assigned to the Broncos coaching staff. So one will play the first half, one will play the second half. But it should be a lot of fun. A couple of the good seniors, unfortunately, pulled out. Harold Landry pulled out, the pass rusher from Boston College. Maurice Hurst, the defensive tackle from Michigan, pulled out late. And Mason Rudolph, the quarterback from – I'm having a mental fart here. But Mason Rudolph, the third quarter – Oklahoma State, thank you. I was going to say Oklahoma, but I'm like, no, that's Baker Mayfield. That's not right. Oklahoma State, he had managed – he pulled out, too, because of a foot injury. So,
and it's the Broncos and
– Texans.
And the Texans, okay.
Correct. Gotcha. They offered it to the Browns, but because they didn't have an offensive coordinator, they declined, which is odd given the chance they'd probably want to take a look at these quarterbacks up close, but they decided they didn't want to. But
and interesting. I don't know.
That's why they're the Browns.
and you have two AFC teams representing the coaches.
Well, basically what you'll do, Jeff, is that you will take – the teams with the worst record in the league and offer it to those teams unless they overhaul their coaching staffs. So you're looking for the teams with the worst records that did not have a lot of coaching changes.
Okay, gotcha.
So that's why a team like the Giants weren't involved in that. That's why a team like the Colts weren't involved in that. So go down the list, and that's how you got to the Broncos and the Texans.
Okay, there you go.
All right, here we go. 201-939-4513. We got calls up. I'm going to go to Russell in Alaska first, Matt. I want to get to him. I'm sure he's on that long distance up there. What's going on, Russell? How are you?
Hey, what's going on, John? What's
Russell?
Going on? Hey, I just want to, I was reading some interviews last night.
Sure.
So, and then I was reading a couple articles and interviews about Eli Manning, and I thought about something, and now I see what everybody was saying, and I'm like, the problem is we love Eli Manning. We love him. We're basically saying we cannot blame this on Eli Manning. But the Giants are basically saying, if they draft a quarterback, they're basically saying, we're not going to be the number one second pick of the draft for the next 10 to 15 years. This is not going to happen again.
That's the hope.
And there's a hope. That's what they're saying. There's a hope. Is what Dave Gettleman and John Mara are saying, I think that's what they basically saying to themselves. We're not going to be in this type of position ever again, and that's a hope. And we're saying we wouldn't have never been in this position if we had an offensive line and a running back. So when John Mara is saying we still got opportunity to win it next year, we believe Eli Manning is our best chance to win it next year. So if Pat Shurmur is the coach for the Giants, imagine this problem. Eli Manning wins comeback player of the year.
So what?
That'd be good.
I mean,
that'd be great.
And yeah, you still got Josh Rosen and you still got David Webb.
But what's he coming back from?
Yeah, but dude, Eli's 38 years old.
But Drew Brees is going to be 39. He's still playing good. This is what we're going. That's what us Giants fans are saying. Drew Brees and Tom Brady are still playing good at this age. Are we really saying we can get rid of Eli Manning? This is the dilemma I was coming with about last night. And I was like, man, but you got a chance to get to another quarterback for the future for the next 15 to 10 years.
Well, and
you
look,
get what,
Russell,
you get
that,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, and look, that's the trick. And I think, depending on how you want to look at that, do you want to prioritize the next 2 or 3 years, or do you want to prioritize the next 10 to 15? And I think
15 years.
And I think that's the type of questions that this Giants front office will be trying to figure out over the course. And my argument would be, look, you can draft a quarterback and still keep Eli here. And if
there's
he plays
no question.
Well, that's great.
Listen, in my opinion, I think that's what's going to happen. I think that Gettleman understands that Eli still has some time left in his, you know, his career.
And by the way, by Jeff and I advocating for the potential of drafting a quarterback if you like one of these guys, this isn't us saying it was Eli Manning's fault and he can't play anymore and they should get rid of him.
No, absolutely. It's more of like what's to come.
What's next?
You know, I think that you have to make the decision from a standpoint as if you're going to get rid of Eli Manning, he has to want to leave, period. Okay, and then you're going to go with, no matter what, you're going to go with rookie quarterback, him or Webb. So, but why not evaluate, talk with Eli, understand that if you think he can still play and still draft a quarterback, bring him in, sit him for a year. The only thing, and we've talked about this before, Russell, is that there's going to always be that pressure that when Eli has a streak of a couple games where he's not playing well, then you're going to hear the chatter about, hey, can we see some of this guy or some of that guy? And I think that there's probably going to have to be a trust factor here with the fact that Eli's going to be told from the organization is that, Eli, you're our guy, but, you know, we're here to win football games, and if for some reason we feel like you're not doing the job we need, we're going to put the next guy in. That's just football. I mean, you can't be afraid of that if you're a player. I would take that and be like, fine, the guy's never going to get in. I'm going to play well enough. That's the way you have to think, okay? But I think that Eli Manning is going to be in the discussion with the organization. They're going to come up with a plan soon. March 1st, he has a roster bonus due. So I think that that's something that's coming up in the next 6-7 weeks that this has to be addressed.
So what if Eli Manning says, no, I don't want this. I only want to help the new guy out.
They're not going to ask him to help the new guy out. There's no coaching staff that's going to say, Eli, we're going to keep you around, but you have to mentor this guy. That's not – because Eli, any quarterback would say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not a coach. I'm a player. I want to play. The guy can learn from me. And that's basically what Davis Webb has done this last year, is learn from Eli Manning.
And he has, by the way.
And that's just so much experience. And now, hey, if you want to learn from me, and that's fine, we're going to be in – these guys are around each other every single day for more hours than anybody knows, especially the quarterbacks, because they're in the room. They're doing all kinds of stuff. They're together. They learn from each other. But Eli is certainly not going to agree to mentor anybody, and you wouldn't want him to mentor anybody. You want him to concentrate on winning football games and doing the best that Eli Manning can do for himself and forget about mentoring. They'll pick that up as you go.
Yeah. All right, thanks for the call, y'all.
You're welcome,
have
Russell.
A great weekend.
Yeah,
thanks,
you
Russell,
too.
You too.
Stay warm.
And I think this is the type of debate we're going to be having for the next
Yeah, and it's okay. I mean, what do you think?
No,
listen, it is what it is. And, you know, for years we've been talking about this going in, like, next year, last year, who the number one draft pick was going to be, and, you know, years before that. And it's just something you have to deal with. And we're not gonna know anything. First of all, they got to hire a coach, and then we'll have an idea of maybe when the coach comes out and gives him some of his answers to the questions being asked about it, that we get some insight into it.
Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, great to talk to you. I can throw the good Giants.
Hi, Joe.
Crap all day. Is there?
Appreciate it.
Starting off with the coach, you know, I think he'd be a good pick, but maybe we, instead of needing a Shermer, maybe we need a Sherman. You know what I'm talking about? As in general, Sherman.
Civil War general, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, going on there. And as far as Eli. You know what I mean? He's proven it in that. And just look at the quarterbacks in there. You know, I know some of them got in there by backups, but you know what I mean? You'd love to have him in there, and he proved he can outdo Brady, so he can go on. But I was looking at, you know, seeing mock drafts already, and I have already seen Josh Allen number one. I seen Mayfield number one. I didn't see either Rosen or the other guy number one, but I'm hearing from a lot of them already. It's who you like, and there's no definite pick on them.
Yep.
And talking now, Paul, he's sold on Webb there. Do we do that much film? Are you guys sold on Webb as strong as Paul?
Well, I think that, you know, for me personally, and I know that John works in the organization, he's here every single day. I haven't seen enough of Davis Webb to understand if he's going to be good or not. I mean, we only in preseason what I've seen. So Paul's out there.
The only thing any of us – no, time out. The only thing any of us have seen is training camp practices and preseason game. None of us have seen anything more than that. That's why, Joe, in my opinion, there's still a big question mark there. Do I believe he has – the attitude, mindset, smarts to do it? Absolutely. But based on what I saw from him in college, on college tape, do I know that he can succeed in the NFL? My answer is no. But do I think he has a shot? Sure.
And, Joe, we have to remember, Davis Webb was drafted by Jerry Reese, okay? And so I would love to see the grade that David Gettleman has on Davis Webb. It might be good. It might be bad. It might be in between. Nobody knows.
Right, and I don't think, even if you have film on him in practice, I don't think that's telling you anything more than watching Josh Allen or Mayfield or any of them
their
college games, you know, until you get in there and you're up against the pros and
playing in there. Joe, the only thing you know about Webb that you don't know about those other guys is the work ethic, the type of guy he is, how much he cares, how smart he is, because you don't really know that stuff until he's in your building. So I think the Giants are completely sold on Webb in terms of the intangibles, the character, the off-the-field stuff. But again, you can have a guy that's great, all that stuff, but then he can't play when he gets on the field. So that's the only thing they know about Webb that they probably don't know quite as much about these other
guys.
And
going strictly from a draft analysis, why was he a third-rounder? Why were there 31 other teams that didn't take him in the first two or two and a half
rounds?
College,
he played in a spread system and didn't do anything NFL quarterbacks are asked to do.
I'd rather increase our percentages, and I think draft one that give you a better percentage to hit on one of these guys to draft or Webb, you know what I mean, to have somebody behind Eli for the next 10, 15 years. Vikings, but I don't know. Maybe the Eagles can pull it out. Now I want to ask you something, Jeff. I rated our punter this year a D and our kicker a C.
All right.
Maybe a C+. Do you give them much more than that?
Well, I hate to give anybody a D, but I will give them, you know, listen, I think both of them combined have the talent to play in the National Football League for a long time.
Yeah. I could go out and punt the ball 20 yards. It's disgusting. And,
well,
you know, our kicker
there,
missing
Joe.
Some close ones, you know what I mean? Even the kickoff.
Not just anybody
sometimes.
Can punt.
They're down to the
remember that.
10 yard line.
Special.
And our kicker can kick them out of the end zone.
Listen, I'm going to tell you my opinion on both of them, okay?
Thanks for the call, Joe.
I think they're very talented. I think both of them need to work on their mental parts of the game, and I know that from experience.
In what way?
Being able to handle situational football from a special team standpoint. I know we heard that word so many times with Coach McAdoo, but there's certain times when you have to be able to be mentally strong in certain situations in the game. Now, I'll go to with Brad Wing on the two games that he had those bad punts that were turned into touchdowns and losing the games. Okay, those were kinds of situations where you have to be mentally strong and come back and do the, you know, you have to execute that kick. Okay, I think that Aldrick was put up. He did win to have a game winner. Okay, but he didn't really have a lot of big important kicks, which I would have liked him to have, because that kind of builds somebody's confidence. When you miss a field goal early in the game, it sits with you the whole time. And if you don't, if you're not able to come back at the end of the game and get one, you got to wait till the next week. So it starts messing with your head. And so, you know, good punters and kickers last a long time in this league. One, if they stay healthy. Number two, you know that they have the skill set. But the most important thing is their mental aptitude, how they apply the mental part of it to the game.
I'm going to keep this simple for you then. How about that?
Well,
here's my simple question for you. A lot of times you'll have a second kicker and punter brought in just to take extra snaps over the course of the offseason. Do you think the Giants are going to do that, or will they bring in real, legitimate competition for both the place kicker and the punter over the course of OTAs and training camp?
I'll answer this in this way. Mike Nugent was brought in here, okay, to not make the team. Mike Nugent was brought in here to show Aldrick Rosas what it's like to be a veteran kicker.
It was Rosas' job to lose.
Yes, but that was kind of what the whole intent behind Mike Nugent was, is to work with this guy from a mentor standpoint. Not, we didn't say, hey, Mike, mentor this guy. But, you know, he's going to see his work ethic.
Mentorship by osmosis.
There you go. That's a great. So, and it all depends on the roster, John. You know, if they're light on defensive linemen, they need more defensive linemen or the receivers, whatever.
Got like 100 guys in here in the spring. If you want to find room for a kicker and a punter, you can.
Believe it or not, they will just always, they'll nix that one and go with another receiver or whatever. Just, it happens. But if you want to go into this offseason and you have a personnel meeting and you say to yourself, we want true competition at these spots. And if those are the competition, then you will see two guys in here, whether it's a veteran or a young guy.
Do you think we will see that?
I think that you will definitely see somebody in here competing with Brad Wing this year, early. I think there'll be two guys in here. They're two young guys.
I agree with you.
And I think that they will have. Now, how long those will last depends on the roster.
201-939-4513. By the way, I want to just jump in on one thing Jeff said before. While Eli wasn't asked to be the mentor of Davis Webb could not have been more clear during the year how much he learned from Eli and how much Eli had taught him. But again, it was in the process of Eli preparing for a game to win that he learned with Eli. It wasn't that Eli was like teaching classes in there and Webb was the student. So just kind of wanted to clear up how that relationship worked a little bit. Let's go to line two, Matt. Stick on the punting side of things. Jason in Maine has a specific punting question for Jeff.
Very good.
Go ahead,
punting
Jason.
Questions.
How are you?
Hi, Jason.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Well, I can't really ask the question because I think last caller pretty much asked it and you guys answered it.
You can only have so many punting questions, Jason. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, really, when you talk about Brad Wing, we know that you saw the year before he had an outstanding season. I think that he regressed a little bit this year. I think he lost his confidence. He's certainly not losing in his leg strength and things like that. And I think that the thing with Brad is that I think he overthinks situations too much. He needs to just relax, go out there, understand his intent. You know, punting and kicking, it's one kick. You might get five punts a game. You got to execute every single one of them. But every one of them is just as important as the other. But you have to have your routine. You got to understand the situations of the game and just go execute it. Don't overthink it.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this other question, though. If Shermer does come in and he does become the coach, I think I remember, John, you talking about he's a West Coast offense type of system guy.
A little bit.
Yeah, you know, Jason, it's funny. He does come from the West Coast system, and I said that, I believe, late last week on the show. But on Monday, and I talked about this on Monday's show, I spent about 4 hours. I watched probably about five or six full Vikings game on coaches tape from this year.
John has a young daughter. He stays up way, way late night watching film.
I did it here in the office, thank you very much. I did not do it at home. I'm not the Tino. But I watched their offense on tape five or six games, and he's not – he must have picked up a lot of stuff from Chip Kelly and then picked up a lot of stuff from North Turner last year, because they throw the ball down the field a lot more than a lot of West Coast offense teams do. They don't run. Rather, in their running game, they use a lot
of
concepts that aren't straight up West Coast. So he is a much more varied coach than you would think, given his coaching background.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that was my concern because I really kind of like – I miss the Kevin Gilbride system, I guess, where Eli would just step up in the pocket and just launch it. You know, those days were pretty cool. But, yeah, those are basically my main questions. I am wondering one other thing, when your guys' lobster show is going to be.
Well,
in the spring.
Lo and behold, we have Charlie that is holding on the line, so maybe we might be able to to figure out a time and day for that one. But
hey,
thank you.
You too, man. Take it easy. And I did look at a couple things here. And the one thing about the West Coast offense that I know I've never been a big fan of, and you know me, Jeff, the last 2 years, what's one thing I've really harped on about the Giants' offense?
No vertical pass.
Not enough big plays through the air, okay? This year the Vikings were right smack in the middle of the league. Actually, even a little better than that, I'm sorry. They were 13th in the NFL with 53 pass plays of 20 yards or more. And that's not exactly with, you know, a future Hall of Famer as your quarterback here. And they were 11th in the league with 9 passes of 40 yards or more.
Okay.
So they did get the ball vertical and down the field, which was certainly good to see. David in Connecticut, he's up next. Hi, David.
Hey,
David, if you're on speaker, do me a favor, pick up your phone for us. You're breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, I just switched it off speaker. Yep.
Gotcha.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Hey, I have two questions. First is Todd Haley seems to be the big name for offensive coordinator. He does a West Coast offense, from what I hear. I know he doesn't really have a background with Shermer. The question is that more of the head coach's decision on who they want?
Yes, it
is.
It's the head coach.
It's definitely the head coach. And Haley, he runs more of a short passing game. I wouldn't necessarily qualify him as a West Coast guy. Remember, he was under he was in Arizona when they were chucking the ball down the field. He was with Dallas before that. He didn't run a West Coast system. So he's, again, I think one of the more hybrid guys. He's a big name out there. He's available. Here's my guess. Well, I don't know if it's going to be with the Giants, but I guarantee you he will have a job as an offensive coordinator somewhere next year.
Could be the Jets.
Could be.
Yeah, he'll get a job.
Is there anybody else out at a relationship with Shermer that's a prospect at offensive corner besides Haley?
You know what? I think that's a great question, David. One guy that jumped out to me at least is somebody who actually I think he announced his quote-unquote retirement. Brad Childress, who was an assistant head coach with Kansas City, and he's from that Andy Reid line, and he's somebody I would not be surprised, again, if the Shermer thing happens, that might be involved in some way, shape, or form when he gets here, or if he gets here.
Yeah, and I don't. Okay. I've looked at some of the coaches and stuff, but it's all speculation. So it's just really, you know, it's just, you know. And one thing about the Senior Bowl, you'll see this, John. And I have never been there, but I just have been told, and I've just known some coaches. That is where a lot of things happen, coaching-wise. I mean, the Senior Bowl is kind of a
11:30 at the bar at night, a couple whiskeys in, and guys are shaking
hands. I don't have a job. I'm still on staff with Tennessee or the Giants or any of those four teams that don't have coaches. They're going to be down at the Senior Bowl because they're going to be faking like they're scouting players, but they're really looking for jobs. That's how it works. Because listen, the GMs are there, all the agents are there. The head coaches are there. The owners. I mean, it's just crazy how many things are going on at that Senior Bowl. And access, as media has the best access to these people probably of any other place that they can get close to a GM or a scout or ask these guys questions about the Senior Bowl players. Yep. Definitely, just hang around the hotel.
Thank you, David. Appreciate the call, bud. Yeah, Missouri is really just like the one major hotel where everyone is and everyone stays. And
it's just
that's the center. So yeah,
and you got nothing else more to talk about than if you need a job, you got to be. And those coaches, it's a fraternity, man. You know, you talk about the coaching tree; they go deep, they go real deep, and coaches are very loyal guys.
And it's not like there's a ton of things to do in Mobile.
No, drink and watch football. That's it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Hello, Chuckles.
Charlie.
Hey, John and Jeff. Hey, Jeff, I got a question for you.
What do you need?
Okay, with Mr. Wing, I think he was affected by the awful special team play that we had this year. So when you get a punt blocked,
it's in
your
crawl.
Doesn't that stay with you and change your mentality a little bit?
It does, but that's my point is that
when was his first punt block though?
When was it?
Yeah. Was it late in the year, or am I wrong about
it
that?
It was late in the year.
Yeah, so what happened to the first 12 games?
Well, it's all mental, but yes, if you had a punt blocked your first game, you're going to think about the guys coming in there, and it takes a little while to get over it, but that's the mental part of it that you have to be able to work with. You got to be able to block it out. Just like a quarterback throwing an interception. I mean,
right. But how many punt blocks did you have in your career?
12.
You probably 12.
No hesitation.
22 years.
12.
22 years and you had 12.
Yep.
But also, he had a couple run backs, and that's going to affect you, too. What I'm saying is,
that's his own fault.
If we get a better coach, a special teams coach, and we have better special teams.
If you have a better roster and have better players to be able to cover.
And, Charlie, just remember, too, the Giants' coverage units the last 2 or 3 years have been some of the best in the league.
Yeah, well, not last year.
A lot didn't go well last year.
You keep saying Eli is like 38. He's not 38. He just turned 37.
I didn't say 38. He just turned 37.
No, you said 38.
I'm sorry.
Play back the tape.
He's gonna be 38.
Because, you know, everybody, you know, keeps saying that Eli is old. You got to remember one thing, couple things. He had the most drops of any quarterback in the league this year. There was over 45 drop passes by our wide receivers. So if you had cut that in half, and I know we had at least 4 or 5 touchdowns dropped, how would his rating been? And how would it, you know, that would have changed a lot, maybe even won a few more games.
Sure.
But, you know, so I'm just like, Eli is still Eli. And we need Eli next year, and we really need him the year after.
Okay. No argument from me. That's fine. Okay.
You know, and the thing is with P-Dot, the reason why he thinks Webb is such a great quarterback, because it fits into his scenario of moving down. Because if he thought he was a bum, then he'd have to take the quarterback at 2, which he doesn't want to do, and he wants a bunch of picks.
And by the way, Charlie, and just for the record, and I reserve the right to change my mind, as I sit right now, if you don't pick a quarterback at 2, I would trade down before I would go and pick a player at a different position.
Yeah, I definitely would trade down, too.
You got to get some picks, yeah.
Hey, I want to clear something up.
Sure.
You said that about the Lobsters after you get back from the Senior Bowl game?
No, the spring. Jeff wants to get them in the springtime, right? Is that right, Jeff?
All right,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
that's
I want them.
That's fine.
I want all those lobsters to be nice and plump. They need to get a little bit more time to, you know.
Okay, so how about this, Charlie?
The bottom of the ocean.
Charlie, here's what we're going to do, okay? As a celebration of the Giants draft class.
All right.
Sometime in May, we're going to do it. And that'll be
Jesus, you guys keep pushing it up.
I'm hungry.
Well, that's the spring, right? Isn't May springtime?
Or let me ask you a question, being from where you're at.
Okay.
What is the best time
That's a good question.
That a lobster would be, like, is it now?
You want hard shell lobsters. They turn the soft shell. I think usually in the spring they become soft shell because they're changing their armor, so to speak. So the soft shells are not quite as good as the hard shells.
Okay, so we want hard shells.
So you want hard shells. So any time from now until probably April.
Maybe
May.
Okay, so Charlie, you know what then? Let's move it up.
I've got an idea.
Okay, what's your idea, Jim?
My birthday is March 7th.
Oh!
Okay.
That is a Wednesday. Okay.
Okay.
March 7th is a Wednesday, and I think that John has the ability to schedule.
I can make sure you're in on that Wednesday
if you like. Maybe that Wednesday, you and I.
Okay.
Okay. We'll have to that'll be the day. It'll be my birthday, and we'll be celebrating my birthday, and we'll be celebrating rock. What'd you call it? I'm not. What?
No, hard shell.
Hard shell. Okay.
Hard shell lobsters on March 7th.
And
got it.
The sign of the fish, so what could not be better than a sit shell?
Exactly. I am a Pisces.
There you go.
Perfect. Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys. Have a great weekend.
Now, remember, I know we're going to talk to you before this, but remember, we need everything.
They also have to show up that morning because they can't show up the day before.
Right.
So they have to arrive before 12.
Oh, way before
12
because we got to have the guys cook them.
I'm going to drive them down.
I'm going to hold them up raw.
I'm going to show up at your door with a lobster. That's going to be the surprise.
What I think we're going to do No,
by the way, Charlie over direct message on Twitter did say he wanted me to give you your cell so he could text you and freak you out. I said, I'm not doing that.
Thank God. I barely get back to you on DM. So, geez, if you had my cell number, forget it. Oh, my God. No, but what I mean by that is that we need everything. I need the bibs. We need, you know, the hand wipey. We need it all. So you take care of it, Charlie. I know you will. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Take care, man.
March 7th.
All the accoutrements.
Yes,
as it would go.
That's very good. I'm not going to try to attempt that word.
Accoutrements.
But so there you go. So March 7th.
Right.
Great day in history.
Okay, that might be a little strong, but okay. See, now I thought you wanted Lance to hold up the live one, so I might try to snap at him.
I think that Lance would be afraid to hold up a live.
Well,
lobster.
That's why we want Lance to hold up the live lobster. I think he would be very
nervous.
But
I think that you and I had the bet, and you know it was our show when we did it. So you have to hold up the lobster. I'm not afraid of a lobster.
But why don't you hold them up?
But these are lobsters. We're going to take those rubber bands off those claws and see what they're.
Yeah, so you could hold it up.
I'll hold them up.
That's fine.
That's fine. So were you.
I'll hold it up. It's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. And we'll get to Tino to turn around and we'll just put it on his head.
Do you think Paul's ever eaten lobster before?
Oh, yeah.
He is a very limited diet. Have you eaten dinner with Paul Dottino before?
I have. On some of our trips when we went to ESPN
games. That's right.
Games.
It is not very varied.
And he's not very exciting. Like, he gets excited about going to these just hole-in-the-wall places that – remember when we went to the Italian food restaurant when we were up in Pittsburgh, I think it was? It was just like his favorite place ever, and you walk in there, it's like, it wasn't bad. But, I mean, it was like nothing to write home. Although, it's in Pittsburgh. What do you expect?
Oh, look at you. I'm not saying anything. Hmm? Let's go to Eric in Virginia. He's up next. Hi, Eric.
Hey, guys. For a second, I thought I called into a cooking show.
Oh, yeah. No, we're back. We're back.
Okay. I have the perfect QB solution. Okay, now just bear with me here. We keep Eli, we trade down for more picks, and we sign Teddy Bridgewater. And Shermer knows Bridgewater. He's been coaching there. He's coached him. He knows him. He can run his offense. He'll come less expensively because of the injury. I think he's back. He's fully healed. And we can get some more picks. We don't have to take the risk of the quarterback and have him sit. We've got someone who could step in immediately if he had to.
Is he going to be available? Well, Case Keenum is a free agent.
Well, I think Bridgewater's a free agent too, isn't he?
Yep,
if I'm not mistaken, yeah.
All three of their QBs.
Oh, they are.
Free
okay,
correct.
Then, okay.
You know
right,
what? You know, Eric, I got to be honest with you.
That's not a bad.
As a short, if you don't want to draft a quarterback, as a short term, you know, kind of hedge your bets and maybe possibly figure out if you have another future guy along with Davis Webb. That's not an awful idea.
I think it's a better idea than having Geno Smith as your backup. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, the question is, would the Giants keep three?
I think it depends who the three are.
It depends on how you know where the progression is in Davis Webb. If they feel like you know,
yeah,
it's
for example, next year, Eric. Let's say they don't draft a quarterback and they don't bring in another young guy like a Bridgewater. And let's just say it's like Eli, Josh Johnson, just to throw out a name, and Davis Webb as the three guys. If Webb proves that he's good enough to be the backup, I don't think they would keep a third guy.
Yeah, and that's going down a year from now. But
correct.
I don't, you know, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I think it all depends on what John said. Is if you decided that you are not going to take the quarterback and you're gonna get some picks to build that offensive line.
And Eric,
line,
on top
possibly.
Of that too, you know, you have to do your medical examination to see exactly where that knee is at. And number two, you would also have to figure out how much you're going to have to pay him. Maybe there's another team out there that really thinks he can start right away, and they're going to pay him closer, you know, not full starter money. But even if they pay him like, you know, like a two-year $15 million contract to roll the dice on him, that's a little pricey for a backup quarterback for the Giants. So I think price would kind of factor into that, too.
He's only 25. Too.
Yeah, he's young. I know.
Yeah. I just got to
believe. Here's the deal, though. I would trade down and get somebody's number one for next year. That'll give us two number ones next year, and if something goes haywire, we can trade our two number ones next year and move up to grab a QB again if we had to.
Well, Eric, you know, and here's the trick. That's why people keep saying, I want to trade down this draft to get, like, you know, draft two top guys in the first round, and I'm like, time out a second. If you're trading down in this year's draft, you're probably not getting two first-round picks from this year's draft. Do you know why? Only one team has two first-round picks for this year's draft, and that's the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, that's
And the Browns. But the Browns aren't obviously going to 1-4. They're not going to trade up to 2. They're not going to do something like that. So, first of all, I would need more than just the 21st and 22nd picks in the draft than the Bills have. So I think what you said is more likely you would get a first-rounder this year, a first-rounder next year, and then you'd get more picks from the 2017 draft, whether it's a 2 or 3 or, you know, however. Depending on how far the Giants move down would depend on how much they would get in a trade like that. But you're right. I think some of that value in that trade would come in next year's draft and probably a big portion of it just because of the – you know, the type of haul you usually get in those types of moves.
But
I got it.
And guys, the last thing I wanted to mention, I have two sons. One's named Harry and one's named Carson.
Ha!
That's awesome.
And I actually met Harry about 10, 15 years ago because one of my sons is in his 30s. The other one is a junior in college right now. And I told him about this, and he practically started crying. Harry's always my favorite player. And,
that's great.
That was really moving when I got a chance to tell him that.
That's so awesome, Eric.
Anyway,
thanks for the call, man.
That.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, great questions, great ideas.
Let me touch real quick on that. I think that, you know, I think a lot of this is going to be identified by what the team decides to do about their offensive line situation through free agency, okay? Are they going to be able to sign Pugh back? Who are the free agents that are available to – they need an offensive line, John.
You don't have to explain that to me. I've been saying that for three years.
I don't care who your quarterback is. They can't play behind an offensive line that is horrible.
And to me, Jeff, the only way you fix the offensive line this year to the point where it's good – is if you use a high pick on an offensive line. Because you can only do so much through free agency.
You don't have a lot of money. I mean, they're okay, but not as much as you would want.
That's my point. So even if you don't use that first-round pick on an offensive lineman, you better use that first pick in the second round on an offensive lineman then, because you're going to have to address this offensive line through free agency and the draft if you want to make a vast
improvement. And my point is that if you're going to go there and you want to trade down – then your intent is now going to be to use some of those picks for some good offensive linemen.
I agree with
that. I think that next year the Giants will be in a better position to spend some more money. They're going to have a lot more money next season. Okay, but we're not talking about – but it does have a bearing on this year when you think about it, okay? But, you know, there's still a chance to restructure some contracts, to free up some money, to get some – but I still think that the offensive line is the number one priority. You got to figure out how you're going to fix that. And if it's trading down to get someone that you really like in the draft for a couple more that you think that lineman you can get, then I would do it.
I would caution against one part of his statement. Even if you have your theoretical two first-round picks next year, that doesn't mean it's going to be easy to trade up for a quarterback for a couple reasons. One, if those two first-round picks are, you know, around where the Bills are, sure, it'll help you, but it's not going to get you all the way.
But they're not great
number
picks.
Number two, how do we know any of the quarterbacks coming out of next year's draft are going to be
name
any
one.
Good? I don't know who they are.
And we got to think about these guys, you know. And we don't have the magic potion here. We don't understand, like, does Dave Gettleman think any of these guys are that good enough to pick at number two?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't think Dave knows yet. Do you think he's sitting down there and looked at all these quarterbacks yet?
When you're down there next week, you'll see at least a couple, okay?
Yeah.
And I know you're a big fan of Baker Mayfield, if he was just a little bit taller like we talked about before we came on the air. But I think that, you know, that's a guy he's a gamer. He's a playmaker. You know, he just loves football. It's just, you know, that's the kind of guy you want, but you got to design an offense around the guy to get out of the pocket a little bit and throw.
Yeah, based on what I've watched so far, and I've watched the top four quarterbacks relatively extensively, 5 or 6 games of each guy, and I can't really do more than that because I want to get to the prospects. My ranking as I have it now, before all this other stuff happens, I would pick Darnold 1, I would go Rosen 2, then you have a little bit of a gap. Then you have Mayfield. Then you have a little gap. And then you have Josh Allen. And that's how I'd go my 1 through 4 right now. Both four would be first-round picks.
And Lamar?
I have not watched him yet. I watched one game of his this morning, and I couldn't get to anything else before the show started.
Yeah,
I think he's a second-round pick. From what I saw in the one game that I watched, I think they played – I watched half of their Syracuse game and I think one other game – He's accurate at times. I think he, you know, goes to run a little bit too much. He has a good enough arm. But I think, you know, I didn't see him make many NFL-caliber tight window throws that I've seen these other guys make.
I mean, you go back and look at his numbers. They're all pretty good.
Jackson's numbers this year way down from what he